Even the man who coined the word Americanism was scornful. That was John Witherspoon, an early president of Princeton College and one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He liked documenting Americanisms, but he didn't always like what he found. He referred to some of his specimens as improprieties and vulgarisms. But despite criticisms, American linguistic creativity continued apace. It gradually gained speed as the 1700s progressed, and then it really took off in the post-Revolutionary War period, ushering American English into its nativization stage. This is when it finally gets to count as its own dialect, not just a new version of British English. Now, it's no coincidence that the beginnings of the nativization stage correspond with the dawn of a new nation. Languages and dialects are a key part of people's sense of national and personal identity. And when you start feeling like a different people, you start talking like one. Again, this doesn't mean that the citizens of the new country immediately embrace their new dialect. It takes some time to move from an exonormative to endonormative linguistic orientation, usually longer than it takes to shift political orientation. But still, the new dialect is there. At any rate, the nativization stage is characterized by an unprecedented level of linguistic creativity. New words continue to spring up in American English, and often to spread to England and beyond. Again, the sources are borrowings from other languages and inventions. Since new words were so important in the nativization stage, let's take a minute to examine the processes involved in borrowing and word formation. These processes apply not just to American English, but to all varieties of English and to many languages. Some are particularly applicable to English. For example, English has never been afraid to borrow from other languages, though some other languages can be a bit more protective, for example, French. Now, when words are borrowed into English, they're sometimes adopted intact, but more often they're adapted in some way. Pronunciations can be altered to make them more English-like. That's why nowadays many Americans say angst for the German borrowing angst. And that's why, back in the day, Native American words were altered. I'm a native speaker of American English, so I can't pronounce words from Native American languages much better than early colonists, but I'll try a couple. So the word raccoon comes from the Powhatan word arukunum, which means he who scratches with the hands. And caucus seems to have come from kakawasa, a Chickahominy word for priests and assistants. There are also lots of adoptions and adaptations from early European languages in America, like German, French, and Spanish. For example, from Spanish, we get relatively straightforward adoptions, like arroyo and canyon, but also adaptations, like lariat from lariata, buckaroo from vaquero, cowboy, and juzgao, jail, from juzgado, which means law court. And from Dutch, we get two of the most widely known and widely used Americanisms of all, boss and Yankee. Boss came into English relatively intact, but the origins of Yankee are more complicated and somewhat speculative. It seems to have come from something like Yanka, the familiar form of the man's name Jan, John. Or Yankee may be derived from Jan Kees, literally John Cheese. This was a somewhat disparaging reference to Dutch people and their dependence on cheese. At first, the term Yankee was used to refer to New Englanders of a particular type, sharp, practical, and materialistic, and maybe just a little tricky, the old Yankee trader. After the Revolutionary War, the term could be used for New Englanders in general. During the Civil War, Yankee came to refer to all Northerners. And by the time World War II rolled around, Yankee was being used all over the world to refer to all Americans. The word Yankee is a good illustration of the complexities involved in adaptation. Adaptation can involve not only phonological alterations, but also changes in word meaning or semantic shift. Another adaptation process involves both pronunciation and meaning. It's called folk etymology, and it involves reshaping unfamiliar words by attempting to analyze them into familiar parts. Nowadays, people sometimes refer to Alzheimer's disease as old-timer's disease. That's a folk etymology. In colonial times, folk etymology led to place names like Port Tobacco, Maryland, from the Native American word potupug. It also led to animal names like woodchuck, which comes from the Algonquian word wejack,